I saw another sign in heaven, great and marvelous, seven angels having the seven last plagues, for in them is filled up the wrath of God. And I saw it as it were a sea of glass mingled with fire, and them that have gotten the victory over the beast, and over his image, and over his mark, and over the number of his name, stand on the sea of glass, having the harps of God all around them. World coming, and it's just around the bend. There's a new world coming, this one's coming to an end. There's a new voice calling, and you could hear it just give it a try. And it's growing strong with every day that passes by. There's a brand new morning rising clear and sweet and free. There's a new day dawn that belongs to you and me. It's a new world coming, the one we
have it, y'all. A new world is coming. So, we began the program a little bit talking about the hunger strikes, and we're gonna get back to that. I wanted to say shout out to Gerald, who couldn't be here today. He's left us in the big chair for the first time, so thank you for bearing with us.
Thanks, Gerald.
Yeah, and thanks to Gerald for keeping this program running for so long. Gerald asked me to
read a letter.
To read a letter. Gerald has been working with the Labor Action Committee to free Mumia for quite some time, and the Labor Action Committee is organizing a coalition of various local organizing groups who organize to put together an action for December 9th. So the letter reads as follows. Dear comrades and friends, we write to you in the midst of ongoing struggles which unite us all. Opposition to rampant police killings of black men, freedom for political prisoners, including former Black Panthers, Oscar Lopez Rivera, Leonard Peltier. Opposition to the death penalty, life without parole, solitary confinement, big pharma, price gouging, immigrant deportation, the Standing Rock resistance to the destruction of both native lands and the environment, the Puerto Rican struggle against imperialist oppression and defense of Palestinians from Zionist terror. We are writing to advocate joining together now in a renewed fight for the freedom of Mumia Abu-Jamal. December 9th, 2016 will be 35 years since the police tried to execute Mumia on the streets of Philadelphia. and then framed him with the complicity of the prosecution and the court and sentenced him to death. It took international mass mobilization to prevent his execution. It is taking protest and publicity to keep him alive in prison to get him treatment for his hepatitis C. And so as you know, we've been talking about it on the program. A recent U.S. Supreme Court decision, Williams versus Pennsylvania, ruled that a prosecutor cannot later sit as a judge over the same defendant. This precedent setting for Mumia, who has filed a new legal action based on the fact that Mumia's appeal of his conviction from 1998 on were denied by Justice Ronald Castile, who was the Philadelphia District Attorney, his prosecutor, during his first appeal. If successful, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling that upheld his conviction would be overturned. Mumia would be able to reappeal the issue of his innocence. Jury bias falsified evidence to obtain a new trial, if not outright dismissal of the charges. It is unlikely that this new legal opportunity to win a court battle for Mumia's freedom will be repeated. We began the struggle for Mumia's freedom with the understanding that the fight for Mumia is one that encompasses the fight against capitalism, racist injustice from police street execution to the legal lynching of the death penalty to frame up convictions, mass incarceration, and all the horrors of the U.S. prison system. The fight for Mumia is a defense of those who stand in opposition to the policies of U.S. imperialism. It is a case of Black Lives Matter. Mumia has never succumbed to the state's attempt to silence him. He is a beacon of light and hope for other prisoners across the U.S., as well as for all victims of imperialist war, racism, and the incarceration nation. We support all legal actions in Mumia's defense, but recognize that there is no justice in the capitalist courts. The Labor Action Committee to Free Mumia, Abu Jamal, focuses on mass and labor action to free Mumia. Without such action, the new case for Mumia's freedom will, as similar attempts have before, be consigned to the Mumia exception judicial wastebasket. We continue to work to get international labor support for Mumia's freedom and for Hep C treatment. Mumia's struggle, if supporters by a mass movement, can only free him, but also help unite struggles of prisoners and other victims of a racist imperialist capitalist system throughout the world. We support a renewed campaign to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. An event is planned for Philadelphia for December 9th, 2016, initiated by the concerned families and friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal and the New York campaign to bring Mumia home. And a call is in the works. Slogans being put forward for this event are as follows. Mumia is innocent and framed. Free Mumia now. Abolish the racist death penalty. End solitary confinement. End life imprisonment without parole. Quality health care for all prisoners. Hep C meds for all. End mass incarceration. Black Lives Matter. No stop and frisk. We ask you to join in an effort to reignite the struggle to free Mumia on all fronts. We will look forward to seeing you for an organizing meeting at the Omni at 6 p.m. on October 12th. That's Wednesday. That's this coming Wednesday. To plan actions here in the Bay Area. Please, for more information, contact Carol at 415-483-4428 or Bob at 510-595-7811. See you on October 12th.
Free Mumia!
Free Mumia. Signed, the Labor Action Committee to Free Mumia Abu-Jamal. Now,
well, that was awesome. I'm definitely going to be going to that. Some of those events. But we have a jazz song now for you guys by Demania. It's a jazz, acoustic, electric, bass, percussion, a little trio. I hope you enjoy the song. The song's called The Black Hand. Was a sick song. I love that one. I love like percussion and jazz. I just love jazz in general. I don't know how many. Eric, do you grow up? Do you play jazz at all?
I don't, but I've been listening to a lot of old school jazz recently because it helps me sort of open up boxes in my mind, think about things a little differently.
It's true. The percussion just does something to my brain.
Mm-hmm.
The hi-hat just makes me like really happy.
So who did we just hear?
That was Demonia. It's three musicians, Alex DeGrassi, Michael Marion, and Christopher Garcia. And the song was called The Black Hand. And they're a jazz acoustic band trio.
Beautiful. All right, y'all. So we began the program today with the song about hunger strikes.
By Temple Dogs.
We have been talking over and over again each week about not only about the nationwide prison strike, but specifically about the political engagement that is happening in what's basically our own backyard down in Merced County. There are a number of people who have just restarted their hunger strike in two Merced County jails. That's the Merced County Jail and the John LaTaraca facility. There's a barbecue going on right now, or beginning in a half an hour, if you have time to make it. Raising money for Live Free Merced, the organization that is the local community
that's supporting a lot of the prisoners on strike right now.
Yeah, and I want to play an interview. This is an interview from It's Going Down. This is an interview with Victoria Castillo, the sort of outside, Victoria. Shout out to Victoria for sure. She is the sort of outside organizer and point person of Live Free Merced, who is standing with and helping others to stand with the hunger strikers in Merced. They began their strike again last weekend, so it is already a number of days in. So I'll let you have a listen, and then this interview is from September 15th, so we'll listen a little bit to this, and then
it's a little long. It's about how long is it, Eric?
About 50 minutes.
Yes.
And you'll also hear Kinetic Justice give a report of what has been going on in Holman, and I have updates on that we will follow up with the interview.
Who's Victoria interviewing?
Victoria is being interviewed by someone from It's Going Down.
Okay.
Yes.
And I don't wanna have to keep on singing the song we say, bring them back home. For my brothers and my sisters who've been gone too long, we say, bring them back home. And I don't wanna have to keep on singing the song.
Okay, we have a special IGD cast for you today. We're going to be talking about the September 9th prison strike. Now, we're not going to do a roundup right now of all the actions, as inspiring as they may be across the world, because there's still people on strike, there's still people on hunger strike, and there's still actions being taken by prisoners happening now. And one of the key places that it is happening is in the Central Valley of California, in the small county of Merced. It's one of the most impoverished regions in California. There's about 100 prisoners that are on hunger strike right now. They're calling for a set of demands to be met, and they're also calling specifically for one of the lieutenants, a sheriff, to be fired from the facility. There's also an organizer on the outside, Victoria, who we're going to talk to today, that is hunger striking with them. We really need you to listen to this podcast. We need you to repost it, share it with friends, and let people know what's going on in Merced. After we listen to Victoria, we have two recordings from the Free Alabama Movement prisoners, Melvin and Kinetic. These are two recordings that were recorded for a special demonstration in Oakland in solidarity with the strike that we're going to replay today. So we really hope that you enjoy it. Please, this podcast is important. Please share it with friends. Let people know what's going on inside, because action is still taking place.
And I don't want to have to keep on singing the song we say, bring them back home.
Okay, we're joined here today with Victoria from Live Free Merced. She's a community organizer, activist, and advocate. And Victoria, you're on hunger strike right now. Why are you on hunger strike?
I'm on hunger strike because I'm desperate for change. And I've been to board meetings. I've tried speaking with elected officials, our sheriff, our corrections department, and I feel like no one's hearing us from inside and behind the walls and out here in the community.
Okay. So just so everybody knows, how did the connection between the people that are currently incarcerated in the jails that are taking action right now in Merced, how did they come to be part of the mobilization on September 9th? How did that all come together?
I saw that there was going to be this large action, and we had discussed it previously, and they had reached back out. You know, I sent the information into the facilities, and they came back out and said, we want to be a part of this. This affects us. It's affecting our families all across the nation. And they wanted to be a part of it to bring light, what's going on in our prisons, the working conditions the prisons, as well as, you know, a lot of local issues.
Okay, and just to be clear, we're talking about two facilities right now that are involved in this, and they're both county jails, and they're both run by the Sheriff's Department, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so let's just kind of back up and talk about the big picture. What is, you said there were some issues in the jails in Merced. What are some of the main things that are causing people to take such action that is, you know, that is causing this response from the authorities, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but kind of paint a picture for us. What does the jails in Merced that these individuals are housed in, what does it look like? What are the main problems, and why are people so angry?
The main issue that they want immediate action to are not having S and Y sensitive yards, inmates, you know, protective custody, both handling food, chemicals, and clothing, because they're obviously putting things in there that is dangerous and very unsanitary for the general population to consume. So that's a huge issue, and it's a particular security threat group. As well. So that's one of the main things. And then we have a problem lieutenant, Lieutenant Moore from the Merced Sheriff's Corrections. He has been very abusive verbally. He has authorized raids where inmates are, detainees, because these are pretrial detainees, are being severely injured. You know, officers going in without badges, wearing ski masks, shooting people on site, even when they're down, people being shot with rubber bullets, bed rounds and pepper rounds, and, you know, having flash grenades thrown at them, and, you know, they're bringing dogs and, you know, sick mom people. It's just really scary, and this isn't a jail, you know, where people are not yet convicted. So that's another one, as well as, you know, classifications. You know, they pick and choose, on the most part, who they're going to classify as a quote-unquote gang member, and there are many people sitting inside these classification housing that aren't even affiliated, but are now having gang enhancements added to their cases. So they're looking at significant extra amounts of time. So that's something else that they want to be addressed. And they're angry because it's been going on for so long, and many people have been affected, you know, on and off over, you know, their dues, you know what I mean? So
Right.
It's just a lot.
Right. So you're saying, and again, these are county jails. So somebody gets picked up, let's say, you know, on a shoplifting charge or whatever, you know, they had an outstanding warrant, or like you said, maybe they just got, you know, they got picked up and they're not even, quote, guilty or whatever. And then they're stuck in the county jail for a couple of days and all this stuff is happening. What are some of the incidents that the police are using such extreme measures? You know, you're talking about they're shooting them with different projectiles and stuff like that. What would drive them to engage in that type of violence with the people that are in the jail?
Well, the last raid of that magnitude took place on June 30th of this year, and the inmates did not have time. They called it a random raid, and it was authorized by Lieutenant Moore. Again, he authorized another one of these types of raids. And, you know, we brought it to the light on July 12th, you know, about a couple weeks later, to the Board of Supervisors. We want to know why these type of raids are taking place, what the purpose is, because from our inside information was that they're using them as some type of free training. And that, to me, seems like significant, cruel, and unusual punishment, because not only are our loved ones being detained in these facilities, like, we don't even know if they're going to be safe, you know, depending on the outcome of the case. We don't know. They might not make it home alive. They might not see their child be, and that's scary.
Wow. Has there been anybody that has passed away in the jail recently? I know in Modesto, a little bit above you, there's a horrible track record of people dying in the jail there. Is there a history of that happening as well in Merced?
Not recently. I mean, the most significant person that was injured was my spouse. His name is Richard Yanis Castillo Jr. He was shot in the head. His hand was shattered in 10 places. His leg was lacerated. He did survive, but all I knew was that he was down when the COs took him out, and I got third-party information, and the jail wouldn't give us information. Over 14 hours, myself and my child, 13-year-old son, we didn't know if he was dead, and that was the most excruciating pain. We do have a significant amount of suicide at the John Matarocca Jail. It's also in Merced County, and we're trying to figure out how these inmates are getting access, or they're being housed alone for some reason, and then they're being found hanging. And it's happening like every month almost. We're having another suicide, and it's really questionable as to why that's happening out there at that facility.
Wow. My heart really goes out to you for that. So you're saying your husband passed away due to an altercation with the guards at the facility?
Oh, no. We didn't know if he was dead.
Oh.
He's alive.
Okay.
He's alive. I'm sorry. He is alive, but we didn't know if he was dead. They would not give us any information. All I wanted was to know if you guys took him to the hospital, is he okay? Can you tell me if he's alive? They would not give me any information. It was awful, and my son and I had to suffer through that. My toddler doesn't understand, but my oldest does. So that was really, really hard. And, you know, his hand is completely damaged. So, and it was the first time he's ever had anything broken. But they had shot him in the head. It was, like, so scary.
God, that's... Yeah.
We had people die in the facilities from these type of altercations. We had a 2006 case. Cedric Davis, he died during an altercation in this jail, in Merced County Jail, with correction staff.
Jesus, man. God. And then, so let's talk about, you're saying there's incidents of young men found hanging in their cells, you know, apparently committed,
yeah.
or it seems to be that they've committed suicide by hanging themselves with their underwear or something like that.
I'm not sure if sheets or not. The last one was a young woman, and I actually knew her from my teenage years. Her name was Aurora Felix, maiden name Powell, and she was found. And they said that she was in a housing unit alone. And I know that she had, you know, mental health issues. So my question was, how was she able to commit suicide, and why? You know what I mean? And before that, it was another gentleman. They could not release his name. But it's just really, it's scary. You know, there's so many suicides happening out, and it's specifically at the John Madaraka jail. And that's what, to me, is really suspicious. I do have to say suspicious, because I just don't see how they're happening every 6 to 8 weeks. You know, we don't go more than 90 days without somebody committing suicide, and that's weird to me.
Right. And it's interesting you brought up, you were saying that it seems to be that the sheriff's department are basically running drills in the jail as kind of, you said, a free training program. Can you explain a little more why you would think that could possibly be?
Well, we do have people that have worked closely or are currently working within the department that have, you know, mentioned that they felt that these type of drills were not... standard, you know, due to the officers taking their badges off and wearing ski masks. And, you know, they go in without giving the inmates any time to get on the floor. So people are getting shot while they're trying to get down, and people are also continuing to be shot as they're on the ground. And, you know, one CO still had rounds in his gun. They call them bot guns. They shoot various types of projectiles. And a young 18-year-old kid was on the ground, and he was like, oh, his gun's not empty. He just went ahead and shot that kid in his back a few times and injured him. So we brought it to light at the board meeting because of what we got from, you know, the people that are cooperating with us from within that own department to let us know that they feel like this is some type of free training, because they're doing them every 8 to 12 months, and, you know, they have to do training once per year.
And these are live rounds that they're using, or these are, you said, some projectile weapons like beanbags or wooden dowels or something like that?
Yeah, there's rubber rounds, beanbags, and then pepper rounds. Like, those ones are burned as
right.
well when they shoot. And then the flash grenades. And then bringing in a dog, you know, so it's really...
Wow.
It's pretty crazy. It's like something that you... in like a large prison raid or something, but it's happening at a jail, and our Merced County jail facility is not large. It's fairly small.
Now, I know in like other Central Valley places, other jails, like, they'll be, you know, kind of not common incidents, but like people will be there for like long time, like, you know, up to 3 years or something. They'll be in like a holding facility. Is that how it is in Merced too, or is it mostly just people that are going to cycle out within like a month or so?
No, there are people that have been in there for significant amounts of time. My own spouse has been in there for almost 3 years, 8 months, finding an evading case, which is really strange because we have homicide cases from 2015 that had already went to trial this year and already been, you know, finished up, and, you know, people have been sentenced. So, yeah, and some people can just pretty much, I would call it, they just let them rot in there. Sometimes, you know, they hold them for as long as they can, and then the cases get thrown out, dismissed, or whatever, and then they just let the people go. But it's, they hold them for a significant amount of time. They delay the court process, you know, and they're ultimately, many times, detained in the jail.
Right, whereas most people, if they had money, would bail out, and then they would just, they wouldn't have to deal with that, and their case would probably be dropped. Or if you are able to bail out, it's a lot easier to fight the case. But you're saying in the case of somebody that does not do that, then they're just stuck rotting in jail for sometimes up to a couple years, which is just insane. I mean, we're talking about a county jail for essentially petty crimes.
Yes.
You know, if they are in fact, quote, guilty.
Yes, sir.
Wow, that's okay. So let's back up a couple months. You were talking about one of these raids. I guess my first question, has this been in the news, this type of stuff? And then you were talking about how you brought this up to the Board of Supervisors. So what's been the response from the powers that be, and has the media picked up on this story at all, or has this kind of just not been reported on at all?
Then they did a report on the portion of what happened with the raid. No one reported. We have Merced County Times, Merced Sun Star. You know, I was questioned by the reporter from the Sun Star in regards to specifics, you know, what happened at the raid, like what injuries, sustained, and whatnot. And then there was nothing printed in the paper in regards to that. So the most exposure that we did receive was when we went to the Board of Supervisors on July 12th. So, yeah, it's kind of like our voices are being suppressed, so they're not trying to get the word out what's happening here.
Wow. So the Board of Supervisors is essentially silent on the issue. They see nothing wrong with what's going on in the jail, and they're not concerned that individuals keep showing up in, you know, dead in the facility, or the police, I'm sorry, the sheriffs continue to injure people in these raids.
No, they have not made an effort to reach out to me. I actually emailed them on September 9th in the afternoon to make sure they had an attachment of the inmate demand letter and why they were choosing to participate in this peaceful protest. And I have not heard back from any member of Board of Supervisor at all whatsoever. And we have 5 people sitting on that board at this time.
Gotcha. Okay, well, let's go up to September 9th, only a couple days ago. Can you talk about the demands that were issued by the prisoners and what happened on that day on September 9th? What exactly did the inmates do? And also, you all had a rally on the outside as well.
Yeah. So, a couple minutes before 10 a.m., well, a few minutes before 10 a.m., we had convened outside of the Merced County Jail, which is also the Sheriff's Department main facility. And the inmates gave their demand letter internally to the COs, and they immediately placed them on administrative lockdown. They're asking, you know, they decided to revoke their First Amendment rights, and they wanted to protest, you know, in solidarity with worldwide prison and jail strikes, you know, on September 9th. And also, they wanted to hope to call on Governor Jerry Brown to sign the SB 1143, which will end juvenile solitary confinement, which many of them have been affected by in our jail as well. Some individuals are being housed in solitary confinement as pretrial detainees. You know, so they're basically put that all out there. They were immediately put on lockdown. We had our rally for almost 2 hours outside. We had multiple testimonies. Our son, which was one, he's 13 years old, giving testimony as to how it feels to have his father inside this facility and not know if his father's safe. We just had so much going on. We had Black Berets, we had prayer, we had the Native American, you know, drum. It was just beautiful. It was heart-wrenching. It was so moving and powerful. We had a large turnout from our set. We had over 30 people.
Yeah.
And from our set, that's pretty big.
Yeah.
Some people just walking by or going to put commissary money on their family's books came out and joined us, you know, because they were like, wow, somebody cares about what my loved one is going through and what my family is also experiencing. So it was wonderful, you know, to make some new connections and have those individuals also participate in getting their testimony. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's really great you all did that. So they were put on lockdown, and then what happened? What was the further response from the prison the jail administration, the sheriff's department? How did they respond after the inmates were put on lockdown?
Well, that afternoon I sent the email, and I CC'd all board supervisors, our sheriff, our Captain Sullivan, who is the head of sheriff corrections, as well as our court. She runs our court, Linda Ramirez-Holz. So she's over the Merced Superior Court, you know, in regards to what was happening. I didn't receive any responses, but by 5:12, I started receiving phone calls, and other folks started receiving phone calls. So after I sent that email, they lifted the lockdown within 2.5 hours. So that was nice. But the following day, which was Saturday, they went into one block. So Lieutenant Moore alleged that he saw people on video making weapons. And they went in with dogs. They didn't wear ski masks this time, which was good. And no one was shot this time. But some officers were not wearing badges. And they took the inmates out by force. They searched and tossed the cells. And then they put them back in their housing unit and gave them back their phone privileges. And today is another incident of them putting them on lockdown. So they have been on lockdown on three separate occasions.